Aloha, this is Catherine Cruz. Thanks for joining us here on The Conversation, Hawaii Talks. It's Thursday, August 27th. Got power? Well, this morning we get the latest from Hawaiian Electric about the progress on restoring electricity to its customers across the state. We hear about the challenges it's also dealing with as we look over our shoulders for the next storms that could come our way. We survey the damage from Hurricane Lala. How did our native trees fare? And what about those invasives? The storms triggered the decision to delay the opening of some schools. We get the sense of preparing for bad weather in our next segment of Homeroom Hawaii. We hear from students and staff. And did you know about a drama surrounding the will of Hawaii's last queen? Trial of the century involving a princess. You're tuned to The Conversation here on Hawaii Public Radio. I'm Catherine Cruz. Today we sat down with Hawaiian Electric Company's Jim Kelly. He's HECO's Vice President for Communications. We talked to him earlier this morning, and he has the latest on the restoration efforts. More than 200,000 customers have had to deal with power outages for an extended period of time, and some are still in the dark a week after the hurricane hit the Big Island. Here's Kelly with some good news about the progress that crews are making getting the electricity back on.
So as of right now, we have 1,432 people out, and our crews went out at daybreak, and they're really attacking these remaining areas where there are clusters of customers that are still out, primarily in the, in Puna, there's about 480 out, Glenwood, Fern Forest, Curtis Town, Nanawali Estates, there's about 373 North Kona that are still, that we're focused on this morning, about 210 in Kau, pockets in Pahala. We brought Pahala back up, but there's still pockets that we're going to be going after. Hamakua, there's about 250 out that we're going after today. So it's really down to the kind of, pocket outages, small clusters of customers. I really appreciate people who've been out for a week or more and, you know, wondering where they're at. But I think we're really thinking today we got one of the last big transmission lines was restored yesterday, which enabled us to bring on about 1,500 people by the end of yesterday. And we're really hoping to knock down most of the rest of these today and into tomorrow.
Well, what can you tell us? Is this just emergency restoration or are people going to be made whole?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it depends on the situation. I mean, there are areas that we saw, and I'm sure you've seen the photos, you know, where there was a lot of mud and flooding, and those are areas that I think are probably going to be temporary because we're going to have to probably establish new footing for poles and some of our equipment. So that might be temporary, but in most cases we're trying to restore, you know, they'll be, you know, getting new equipment in some cases, and this is something that isn't just going to be a temporary kind of a hole. It should be permanent.
Well, I know that you folks were cautioning that it could take months, and we were all hoping that that wasn't going to be the case. But, you know, being from Guam and dealing with super typhoons,
right,
and really crazy winds, the devastation to wooden poles and even concrete poles and metal poles.
Yes.
People here do not have any idea how bad it can be. And then I don't know, do we have enough wooden poles on island? Do we have a stockpile somewhere?
Yeah, we're actually after, I forgot the name of it, but we had a storm pass by in 2024, and we really made a point to stock up on Hawaii Island, because Hawaii Island, you know, 9 times out of 10 gets the first hit and usually the strongest hit from anything coming through. And so we made sure that we beefed up our inventory of critical equipment like poles, transformers, all the things that we know that we need immediately after the storm passes to start restoring people. So our stock of equipment is good, and that hasn't been an issue. Interestingly, and for those who are around for ESEL back in 2014, which really, when you look at that storm, that really hit Puna hard, but didn't really affect the rest of the island. There were some, obviously, some storm effects, but it wasn't like Lala, which really did cause damage across the island. It wasn't just Puna. But in ESEL, we lost 210 poles, and they were almost all in Puna. This storm, we've lost 174 poles across the island. So it speaks to a couple things. One, we've been doing a lot of resilience work, some of it related to wildfire safety, but just regular beefing up resilience work, so we lost fewer poles. And it's a lot easier to get people up when you're just restringing. The line might come down, you know, a tree might take the power line down. But if the pole's still intact and you can just reconnect it, that makes it a lot faster restoration work. I thought that's kind of an interesting one of the things that we found out as we're kind of now collecting data on what kind of work that we're doing right now.
And then the transmission line damage, particularly here on Oahu, right, because we hadn't seen like so many customers in the dark and, you know, huge areas in East Honolulu.
Right.
It was just crazy.
Yeah, I mean, we did on Oahu, we got 80% roughly of customers who had an outage back within about a day and a half. I mean, that we did get a lot of people back fairly quickly, but then there were some lingering, again, areas that we had to go out and see what was going on, primarily with transmission infrastructure. And so far, especially on Hawaii Island, but even on Oahu, trees coming down and taking down lines and poles is probably around 60% of the transmission outages that we had are related to that. And that is absolutely something that we're going to have to really all work together to address, because we spend about $20 million a year on vegetation management. It goes on almost every day of the year.
Yes, those albizias certainly do damage.
Just on Hawaii Island, just through the first 6 months of this year, we've taken out 20,000 trees trimmed 20,000 trees. And yet, that is still the primary cause of some of the biggest and longest duration outages when you have these huge trees. You can see the pictures. You can see them taking out this infrastructure. And it's a challenge because we cannot go beyond the right-of-way that we have unless for our infrastructure, unless it is an imminent threat to falling down and taking something out. Then we can take that out. But if it's on private property, government, state property, we don't have the legal authority to go in and just start cutting people's trees back. So I think that's an issue that it's a public policy community issue that we're all going to have to take a look at.
Well, what can you tell us about the crews from the mainland that have been brought in? Because it's the first time, from what I understand, that we've had to do that.
Yes. I think the last time that was done was during Aniki in 1992 over on Kauai. So for us, we've never had to bring in, and it's called, you know, mutual assistance. We're all part of this utility group, Western Utility Group, that stands up mutual assistance whenever a utility needs to bring in extra help. And for example, in 2018, we sent our crews to Northern California to assist PG&E when they had the Camp Fire there, which was the devastating wildfire in Northern California. We sent crews from Oahu, Maui, and Hawaii Island to go over and help with restoring power there. This was the first time that we had ever brought in mainland crews after a storm. We were starting to plan this out about a week ahead of time. We were starting to contact our mutual aid partners and just say, look, this one looks like it's going to be pretty bad. Get ready. And so we were able to arrange with Southern California Edison. Our colleagues there were able to put together crews.
How long will they be here?
I think we were looking to see, a few days ago we were still concerned about some more storms coming, so I think we were looking to keep them here. Well, certainly they're going to be here through getting everybody back online, which I'm hoping is going to be the end of this week. And then I think we'll reassess weather and see what the weather is holding. If it looks like we've got some other bad weather coming in, for right now, I think we're clear, but so they can presumably stay a little bit longer if we need them.
Yeah, well, we'll keep our fingers crossed.
And it also is a situation where we brought over people from Oahu. Once we got Oahu back up and Maui as well, then we also added teams over on Hawaii Island.
Well, you know, I know that your crews have been, you know, working around the clock initially, and folks are tired, right? So they need some relief. And now that, you know, we've got the bulk of people back up again. But I know Star Advertiser, I think, had a story about the concerns that Congressman Case had about if Oahu gets hit with a really bad one, we're going to hurt for a very long time because of the infrastructure that we have. You know, whether it's the wooden homes, the old homes, and just the lines. Because, you know, and I say this often on the show, I have been without power for 3 months and without water for 1 month. So if people think about that when the power goes out for 2 hours, about how much worse it can be.
Yes. And again, putting it back on to, and I do, just to go back to the cruise, I just want to really, I'm happy, one of the happy points I can report is that there have been no safety incidents involving either the crews working, and it's dangerous work, not just with the power lines, but dealing with trees falling and branches coming down. So we haven't had any safety incidents involving the general public either. So that's a positive. Yes, I mean, I hope everybody takes, I know I did, everybody takes this opportunity, if they've been without power, to really assess, okay, what kind of shape is my household in? And do I really have what I think I'm going to need going forward if we had a long duration outage? And obviously, if we had a direct hit from a Category 3 or 4 hurricane, probably power outages would be one of the least concerns that we would be dealing with. We'd be dealing with roads that were blocked. Mm-hmm. We'd be dealing with the harbor potentially not being able to be used, with the airport down.
Bigger problems, not just inconveniences.
I mean, yep, and obviously we'd be focused on getting back critical infrastructure, you know, the hospitals and the water and the sewer treatment and public safety institutions, getting those folks back up first. But yeah, look, we're having these extreme weather events that used to be somewhat occasional occurrences are now, this year we've had two with the Kona lows and then now Lala, and we're not through the end of the year yet, or end of the season yet. So this is something I think requires everybody kind of looking at their own situation and their own setup. And it also is for commercial customers, people that run office buildings, condos, hotels, whatever, most of those have generation, but you got to test it, and you got to make sure it's working. You got to make sure that you have a fuel supply set up. That's something that those folks have to pay attention to.
Yeah, resiliency, redundancy, top of mind. Well, thank you so much, Jim. I really appreciate you giving us the latest update.
And sure. Thanks for the conversation, Catherine, as always. And just, yeah, I really want to thank everyone for their patience and aloha. There have been a lot of things I've seen where people are going out and thanking the crews when they see them come through the neighborhood. And that really means a lot to those guys. You're right. They've been working hard, and it means a lot to hear from customers and their neighbors. They're most of the time dealing with the same kind of situations that other customers are. So thanks for this opportunity.
We've been hearing from Jim Kelly, Hawaiian Electric's Government and Community Relations Vice President.
Five years years ago, British Columbia saw the deadliest natural disaster in Canadian history, a heat dome that lasted 8 days and killed more than 600 people.
It was record-breaking, and the system, and it wasn't just the ambulance system, also the hospital systems became overwhelmed.
What emergency services there learned next time on The World.
Beginning this afternoon at 1, after All Things Considered.
Support for HPR comes from HMSA, for nearly 90 years providing health plans to the people of Hawaii with a commitment to supporting the health and well-being of the community. Learn more at hmsa.com.
We continue to talk about trees and the impact of the winds and the rain that came ripping through the islands thanks to Hurricane Lala. HBR Savannah Harriman-Pote joins us live this morning. Hi, Savannah.
Hi, Catherine.
Yes, you know, just listening to Jim Kelly talk about that was pretty sobering. 20,000 trees they've tried to tackle on the Big Island alone.
Yeah, absolutely. And these trees, as they said, are huge culprits for power outages. One of the main offenders is albizias. These are trees that if you basically breathe on them, they fall over. They have really tall canopies that act kind of as sails when the winds kick in. And then they also have shallow roots. They're just not very well anchored during these storms. A lot of them are in the Puna region. There's still pockets of Puna that are without power. I would add to that list also eucalyptus. That's another introduced tree, and it seems to be another culprit for bringing down lines in this storm. They're also a top-heavy tree, and they have shallow roots. And especially on the north side of Hawaii Island, there's a lot of places where eucalyptus stands line roads, so they're right next to utility lines.
You know, and you mentioned Puna. I remember they had the joke, right? The tree that ate Puna, the albizias, just because they've just taken over.
Yeah, exactly. That's a well-known problem. I actually talked to a resident in Puna who was without power in this storm. But during Tropical Storm Isel, they were without power for 32 days. They were on one of the hardest hit streets. So Puna oftentimes sees outages related to downed tree lines in any kind of major weather event.
Well, what can you tell us about our native trees? How'd they fare?
Right. So the storm also took a toll on native trees. I spoke with Rob Yagi, and he oversees a patch of native dry forest in Waikoloa, and it's home to several species of native trees. And he said overall their site on the leeward side of Hawaii Island was pretty lucky, but some individual trees took major damage, including a special willy willy tree.
If you've never seen a willy willy tree before, they're these beautiful, charismatic orange tree on the landscape. The bark is a deep burnt orange. In Waikoloa, we have this remnant patch of willy willy, and today we have roughly 131 of these ancient trees that are hundreds of years old, somewhere between 200 to 500 years old for each individual tree. And that's just a small fraction of what was in the area historically. One of the biggest unfortunate events was that the state recognized largest willy willy unfortunately had a major collapse, and so this is a tree that we always called our champion tree because it was recognized as one of the largest trees in the entire state and in the entire world, because they only live here in Hawaii. Although some parts of the tree are still standing, it's kind of a roll of the dice as to whether or not that tree is going to survive or not.
Wow, and so that was what, an exceptional tree?
Yeah, I don't know if it was actually registered as one of our exceptional trees in that program, but it has that recognition from the state as this particularly magnificent example of a willy willy tree in that ancient grove that they have there of 131 willy willy trees. And willy willy tree, they're part of our dry forest ecosystem, which overall has been reduced to about 5% of its historic range. So many of its species, including the willy willy, are vulnerable. And some years ago, actually, the willy willy was the target of an invasive gall wasp. But the state was actually able to save the willy willy by introducing another wasp that preyed on that gall wasp. And the Waikoloa Dry Forest Initiative, where Yadi works and his partners, they've done a ton of work in planting new wili-wili. Yadi said they planted hundreds, if not thousands, of seedlings around that community. But these old trees, like the champion tree, a tree that you think of has probably survived countless storms already, those trees are really rare. So that's quite a big loss.
Yeah, that's such a shame, though. You know, you just worry when the numbers are dwindling.
Yeah, and they actually had damage to an even rarer tree, the critically endangered uhi-uhi tree. This is a tree I had not even heard of. It's in the bean family, and it has these rounded green leaves and these little pink flowers, and it's a dense hardwood that used to be prized for making weapons and fishing implements because the wood is so heavy that it'll sink in water. And there's fewer than 50 uhi-uhi left in the wild, and the Waikoloa Dry Forest cares for 8 of those individuals. And of those 8 trees, one of those 8 trees had the majority of its branches ripped off by Lala's winds. And Yadi is holding out hope that it will survive, especially since that tree was one of the best seed producers of the remaining uhi-uhi, and those seeds are going to help ensure that this critically endangered species has a future.
Wow. And then what about our ohia trees?
Sure, yeah. You can't really talk about our native trees without touching on our ohia. So Hawaii Island has already lost over 1 million ohia to rapid ohia death, or ROD. And there is concern that Hurricane Lala could make that epidemic worse. So ohia themselves are pretty hardy during storms, but when you have hurricane-force winds, you're going to see a lot of broken branches. And ROD is a wound disease, meaning that the fungal pathogen that infects trees needs some sort of opening in the bark in order to infect the tree. And all of those broken branches that we're seeing across the landscape are now vulnerable to infection. And another component is that when a tree does get sick, it becomes a target for these little ambrosia beetles that bore into the tree, and then they produce this beetle frass, this fine powder, almost like sawdust. And that powder can be carried by the wind and is full of fungal pathogen spores, so it becomes potentially a vector for new diseases. And so if these things line up, you have the spores blowing around in the hurricane winds and infecting newly opened wounds in ohia, we could see new outbreaks of ROD in Hawaii's forests.
Well, that's not good news, you know.
It's not good news. This is something that researchers have been looking into after other storms. So they've really been investigating this link between ROD and storms since Tropical Storm Isabelle hit Hawaii Island in 2014. And at that time, they were really just identifying rapid ohia death, and there's a lot more we understand about the disease now. But after that storm, there were these new outbreaks of ROD where it hadn't been reported before, and in some instances, scientists were able to prove that the fungus causing these like disparate outbreaks miles apart from each other were genetically related, meaning the pathogen was making these huge jumps from one place to another. And so that's where the hypothesis came from. But the researchers that I talked to say there's still a lot we don't know about this relationship, and Hurricane Lala is another chance to figure out what exactly is going on with storms and ROD. So scientists are going to be monitoring for new outbreaks. A lot of that work is done via aerial and satellite imagery by the Spatial Data Analysis and Visualization Research Lab at the University of Hawaii at Hilo. And that lab is going to be working with researchers at UH Manoa to do atmospheric modeling to see if they can line up the wind patterns during Hurricane Lala and the patterns of new disease hotspots over the next couple of months. And this is going to take some time because it takes a while for a tree that's been infected to start showing symptoms. So this work is really going to be taking place over the next year or so.
Well, you know, you talk about the spread of disease, and I worry, too, about some of those other invasives, you know, like the little fire ant and maybe the coconut rhinoceros beetle will be blown into another area.
Of course. I mean, we know that little fire ants can be carried easily through water. They're very light. Coconut rhinoceros beetle uses detritus for larvae, so downed green waste could be a new breeding ground for them. We also, one of the things that everyone that I talked to flagged as an immediate concern is the hurricane did a lot of damage to fences that protect natural preserves. And these fences keep out hooved creatures, cattle, goats, pigs that come in and they trample over delicate species. They wound ohia. And once they're there, they're very hard to get out. And so these fences have been kind of critical in conservation efforts. And I talked to J.B. Friday. He's a forester on Hawaii Island, an extension forester with the university. And he said, you can walk along these fence lines and you'll see hoof prints where animals are looking for a way to get in. So they'll be quick to take this opportunity.
Wow, that's pretty crazy. But thank you so much, Savannah.
Thank you, Catherine.
Well, we've been hearing from HPR Savannah Harriman-Pote. Look for her stories on our website, hawaiipublicradio.org.
For decades, Americans were told to look for that chasing arrows recycling symbol and toss their packaging in the blue bin. But California says that system isn't working. Now the state wants to crack down on misleading labels and hold companies responsible for the waste they create. I'm Amory Sievertson. What should be recyclable? That's on the next On Point.
Beginning this afternoon at 2, after the world.
Support for Hawaii Public Radio comes from Aloha Air Cargo, offering 5 direct flights weekly from Honolulu to Seattle-Tacoma Airport. More information at AlohaAirCargo.com.
This is The Conversation on statewide member-supported Hawaii Public Radio. Coming up, your backyard quiz. In today's quiz, we look ahead to September. Other than being the start of pumpkin spice season, September is National Emergency Preparedness Month. From floods to hurricanes, Hawaii has had to prepare itself for a handful of natural disasters. And this includes filling up water bags, charging our generators, buying transistor radios to stay up to date with the latest news. What's one of the biggest problems that almost every island has faced in the past few months? Power outages. And when the power goes out, fast access to cell service soon follows. We received many complaints on our talkback line about people being unable to place a phone call in the days after Hurricane Lala hit the Hawaiian Islands. For people who don't have walkie-talkies on hand, connection could be pretty tough. Did you know that there's an app that could turn your mobile device into a walkie-talkie? Well, if you did, perhaps you know the answer for today's quiz. We want to know, what is that app that turns your iPhone into a walkie-talkie? Call 808-941-3689 or toll-free 877-941-3689 if you know the answer. The first one to get it right gets an HPR reusable tote bag.
Support for the Backyard Quiz comes from Nereid Hawaii, which supports nonprofits providing affordable housing for families of agricultural workers and retirees, such as the Kunia Village Development Corporation. NereidHawaii.com.
School is now in full swing across the Hawaiian Islands, and students have transitioned from hurricane preparedness to the nerves around running for student council and settling into the year. We're going to hear from some students now in our second installment of Homeroom Hawaii. It's a series where, once a week, we spend time with our students, educators, administrators, and school staff who share their experiences with us. It's a story of a school year in real time, and this week we hear about the transition from the honeymoon first week to rolling up the sleeves and getting to work in that second week.
The second week of school is a little easier than the first, just because I kind of settle into my schedule and I made friends in all the classes that I have, and I finally remember which order I go to them in.
Typically, that second week, for me anyway, is kind of a blur because you see 5 or 6 different classes a day for about 30 minutes, and it's just a whirlwind of kids being back in the library, excited. They want to tell you everything they did for the summer. I tend not to have a very quiet library. I'm not much of a shh library. Try to have some fun with the kids and get them really comfortable in the library at the beginning of the year. Again, this is Renee Gilsdorf signing off from King Kamehameha III Elementary.
Aloha, this is Kau'i Tanaka coming to you from Maunawili Elementary School. The second week of school is running smoother than the first. Many challenges, coverages with teachers or EAs not being able to come to work. I think more than that, though, is the maintaining of Pilina. We did a lot of work building that and trying to maintain those feelings of belonging on campus, and the school year gets going and we all get busy. So to help that, reminders of aloha and care, and how we just help and show up for each other helps to maintain the culture at our school. We really just want to see students become great character people in the end. I had the honor tonight of attending our PTO-sponsored ice cream social.
It's called Ice Cream Social, where you get free ice cream at Maunawili. They have strawberry, swirl, chocolate, and vanilla.
Mommy, they do have strawberry swirl!
Would you like to find a friend, Bingo?
Hey! Let me help you!
You can order your ice cream on this side.
There we go!
Aloha, this is Lokelani Han coming to you from Ke Kula Kai Puni o Kuala Pu'u, Kuala Pu'u Public Conversion Charter School. The second week feels a lot more comfortable. The kids have gotten into our daily and weekly routines, which is always nice. Sixth graders are the leaders in our school, and so they finally taken on some kuleana. Responsibility as being classroom leaders for the younger grades. And that's always an interesting time to see them transition from being led to being leaders.
This is Aura coming to you from Kanakakai Elementary School. And one of the exciting things I did this week were cool projects. We did this one where you make a playlist with some motivational songs.
This is Tyler. One of the songs from my playlist is Jaja Knows by Kanaka Fire.
My name is Judah. In class, we had to work a lot. We had homework on the first day of school. Today, we worked on multiplying decimals and negative numbers. I'm running for student council. I'm going for president. So I'm going to do like a poster. I'm challenging another student, which I think is going to win me.
For student council, I got all the signatures I needed, and I actually won the election, which is great. But student council is so stressful because we have homecoming we have to host. This is Aldrin signing off from Farrington High School.
Vai ho mai mai ki le ka pa ho ku ko vai a pela vale a tu a me ka ka me ho peloa.
Well, definitely the honeymoon is over. We already had some behavior, some kids got caught with some vapes, but all in all, everything's been a good second week, and definitely better than last year. Most of our student population is from immigrant backgrounds, so our proficiency is challenged. Many of our students lack foundational skills, so our goal is to teach them foundational skills and get them bumped up to the standards of the grade levels they're in. How do we help in 1 year catch kids up that are 2, 3, 4, 5 years behind? Once again, this is Joe Passantino signing off from Kaylee Kulani Middle School.
Enrollment was a lot lower than was expected, which means our budget is now cut down.
So, you know, we're going to have less to spend and, you know, maybe going to have to write some grants, which is also something that's going to be a challenge for robotics. You know, I'm not sure if what our funding is going to look like yet. This is Edmund Dia signing off from Molokai High School.
Aloha, this is Katina Suarez, principal of Molokai High School. I guess some challenges for this week were that we started the week pretty somber as expected because we had some deaths and injuries of students and recent students that were in an accident. And then the week was otherwise pretty positive. And then the end of the week, we ended with preparing for a hurricane. So I guess one of the things people don't realize about being a principal is that we do a lot of emergency response. So we have to do a lot of messaging and go to meetings. And when the schools are closed, we're actually still in meetings and communication with Department of Transportation or our police department or our complex area superintendents on whether to open or close our schools. We do inspections on the schools after storms and daily if it's safe to do so.
So this is King coming from Kanakakai School. I'm kind of looking forward to learning about the big stuff. So we're getting into algebra and I kind of searched it up and I saw those big equations.
I'm looking forward to Fridays where we play games in the morning. There's some card games and board games, which would be fun.
I like when we play Konane. Challenges this week was probably getting back into decibels.
For me, it was getting to school on time.
Aloha, this is Kapua Chandler coming from Namahana School. So we've been raising funds to build our school. Part of my job, while it is the typical things of being here on campus and running the school, another big part is just being out in community and sharing the message of what we're doing here, why it matters, and then actually building a school that reflects our community. And our architects are like me, you know, born and raised from our community. And we want, 100 years from now, our school's going to be a historic building. And that's the kind of feeling that what we're building now, we're thinking of that in the same way we have pride for our kupuna and the generations before us for the historic buildings we have now that have informed how we grew up. That's what we're keeping in mind as we build out Namahana in Kilauea. That's all for me today, but this is Kapua Chandler signing off from Namahana School.
Aloha, this is Angela Carabin coming to you from Kauai High School. To be honest, I thought senioritis was a myth. Oh my gosh, was I wrong. It stems from the feeling of pressure over college apps, scholarships, and maintaining grades while trying to make it look like I'm not struggling to balance them all together. I always have to remind myself to save a little grace for myself and others around me because I know things can't be perfect all the time. Neither can people. Maybe it feels like you're falling behind because you've been consistently raising the bar every day. And I believe that as long as you're growing, even a little bit, day by day, you are progressing. This is Angela Carabin signing off from Kauai High School.
Those were the voices of Homeroom Hawaii. It's a new project here at HPR, produced by G.W. Gibson. You can check it out on our website later today.
Support for Homeroom Hawaii comes from Hawaii USA Federal Credit Union, helping people across Hawaii build financial knowledge and make decisions at each stage in their lives. HawaiiUSAFCU.com.
HPR is hiring a donor relations officer. The role involves building meaningful relationships with donors and supporting measurable fundraising goals. The position works collaboratively to advance HPR's major and planned giving efforts, to help strengthen donor engagement, and to support the station's long-term financial sustainability. For more information, go to hawaiipublicradio.org/jobs.
Support for HPR comes from the Scheidler College of Business at UH Manoa with an Executive Education Virtual Coffee Hour September 10th. Registration at scheidler.hawaii.edu/executive.
Now it's time to reveal the answer to our backyard quiz. Earlier today, we asked you what app turns your phone into a walkie-talkie. Its anonymity and free use made it popular among protest groups in the early 2010s, such as the Arab Spring Movement in Egypt and Euromaidan in Ukraine. It became so powerful that the Russian and Venezuelan governments tried to ban the app to stop people from organizing. The app became a household name in the United States during the devastating 2017 hurricane season. Volunteer rescue groups for hurricanes Harvey, Irma, and Maria used the platform as a makeshift emergency dispatch center. At its popularity peak, the app was being downloaded at a rate of 7,000 new users per minute. Think about that, per minute. Today, people still use the service during emergencies to contact first aid services as well as their loved ones. Now, the name of the app we were looking for, the Zello app, rhymes with Jello. Hawaii storm season isn't quite over yet, so make sure to check our website, hawaiipublicradio.org, for updates. And we have no winners today. We stumped you on that one. But that's our quiz. If you have an idea for one, write to TalkBack at hawaiipublicradio.org. Kumukua Theater kicks off its 56th season with a story you may not know about. The Downtown Theater is known for elevating Hawaii stories, and the Queen's Will opened the season last week. Take a listen.
Take a good, long look. Who is this before you? Is this Teresa Bellavo, Princess of Hawaii? I say not. I say she is nothing more than a forger and a criminal conspirator.
We talked to playwright Sean T.C. O'Malley about the storyline. He's known for a trilogy about Robert Wilcox, the first delegate to Congress. But The Queen's Will focuses on the drama swirling around his wife, who was accused of falsifying Liliuokalani's will and stood trial for fraud.
It's not a commonly known story about the Queen. She did have a will in 1909, which went through a bunch of contests legally. And then at the time of her death, in the fall of 1917, another will surfaced. And various things happened. There were people who signed documents about what the will was, and then they recanted their testimony, and things eventually went to trial, resulting in the trial of the century, which was taking Princess Teresa to trial for conspiracy and forgery.
And so for people who may not know who Princess Teresa was...
Yeah, so Teresa is a member of Hawaiian royalty. She was married to Robert Wilcox, who was our first delegate to the U.S. Congress in 1901. But she, in her own right, was a very powerful and interesting woman. She was a newspaper woman. She was a political figure, especially in the early 20th century. At a time when women couldn't vote and couldn't even be allowed in the room for political discussions, she would sort of hold court just outside the door and send in representatives and tell them what to say. She was a very opinionated, a very strong woman, and this was a difficult point for her. That's one of the things that the play does, is it points out what the challenges were for this incredibly important person to have this happen to her.
Well, now, you did a number of plays about Robert Wilcox before, so was this something that you discovered as you were poking around?
Partly. I mean, I'd done plays about Robert Wilcox's earlier life at the time of the Bannat Constitution and then the reign of Kalakaua. And the last play I did was about his time, Robert Wilcox's time in the U.S. Congress. And at the time, he was married to Princess Teresa. And she was a very interesting figure, a pleasure to write as a character, a very interesting person to learn about. Robert died soon after. And actually, it was a family member who came to me with this story. Prince Philip, who was the great-grandson of Teresa and Robert, he had come to see a play we did back in 2012, which was about the Wilcoxes' time in D.C. And he and his wife were there, Patty, and they talked with me. We went to see Genealogy. We spent some time together, and then I didn't hear from him. And then 2 years ago, he called me up sort of out of the blue, and he said, you know, I was thinking whether you might want to write about this incident, and I had never heard of the trial. And he said, oh, well, let me give you some reading material. And he gave me a thumb drive with, I think there were over 500 articles in it.
Wow.
And I initially wasn't really drawn to it. I said, you know, this is, I don't really do courtroom drama. This is a very detailed thing. And but I promised I'd read them. And it was a very interesting case. And so I read through and just with this little voice in the back of my head, where's the play here? Where's the story here? So this is not a courtroom drama play that I've written. It definitely refers to what happened in court, but that's really only Act One. Act Two follows the aftermath. I'm not going to tell you how the court case
okay.
turned out.
Don't spoil it.
But, you know, maybe to think of this more as a true crime play, that this is about the mystery of what happened, about who was changing their story, who was lying, who was getting bribed. All of these interesting things happen. And then in Act Two, it's a little bit more philosophy about what does it mean? Who gets to tell the stories? How do things work? And that's, you know, this is the territory of Hawaii. This is 1918. A little bit of a wilderness in terms of the legal system and how things worked here. So it was fascinating for me to learn about that time and resulted in what I hope is an interesting play for people to come see.
Yeah, because I think people, you know, may not know about all the cloak and dagger stuff, right, that was happening and playing out during that time.
And there were mysteries that came up during the time. And one of the most interesting things is a small detail that I think people will know what I'm talking about when they come to see the play. It was just a little tiny piece in the paper about somebody's fountain pen turned into a little rabbit hole exploration for me. And, you know, it's very interesting to take a factual record and to try to embody the people that are living through it, to put, you know, live actors on stage, to have the audience see these people, see their emotions and their interactions and get a sense of what the world was like that they lived in and how they felt about what was going on around them.
You know, what I love about the productions that the theater does is that it uses real Hawaii stories, right? And then, yeah. You know, you hope that people will, their interest will be piqued and then they will do some more research and go down another rabbit hole because that's often what happens with the stories that you folks put on stage?
Yeah, Kumukuhua has been around for a long time, and it's just a terrific place for Hawaii stories. You know, it's Hawaii stories for Hawaii people and written by Hawaiians, Hawaii's people. And it's the kind of thing where it's not only about these well-celebrated public figures, but they're also quite often plays about families in Hawaii. And there are playwrights who come in and take a class and they say, oh, you know, I've got an interesting story about my tutu and this thing that happened, and that can become a play. So Kumu does have all these very interesting tidbits about what makes life in Hawaii special.
And if I recall, isn't there a statue right next to the theater?
A block and a half away, Robert Wilcox's statue stands. Yes, it's quite a dramatic statue. He's wearing his Italian officer's uniform. He trained in Italy for 10 years before coming back. Yeah.
Yeah, but I just love that, you know, a sense of place and history and stories. And I just was over at the offices upstairs. The state librarian's office is up there. And so that's really neat when you think of, you know, they're the keeper of the stories, right?
Right.
All kinds of stories.
And this story, the play takes place in the law office the night before the final summation of the trial in Act One. And that office was diagonally across the street from Kumukuhua Theater.
Wow, that's
it was
pretty
right
awesome.
There. Yeah.
Pretty awesome. Well, so you're kicking off this season. I don't know. What else is in store?
Well, you know, we're kicking off the season, and actually I should let Kumu talk about what else is in the season. There's some pretty big things coming up. There's some special things with some of our elder statesman actors in the spring. A trilogy of plays about Hawaiian life on the North Shore, and it's a little rougher series. But what's happening this week is kind of crazy because it's not only is this play opening for me as the playwright, but in our household, it's a little crazy because my wife is also directing down the street at TAG. And
yes.
Her play, BFF, by Anna Ziegler, opens on Sunday. And so we do see each other occasionally, but it's really busy.
Yeah, no, I mean, what a thing to have, right? Dilemma, all these wonderful productions mm-hmm. that are in play, you know, but lots of events for all of us theater lovers.
Yes, come see live theater. It's really different. You know, I mean, to see an actor right in front of you, embody, especially for a play like mine, to see a historical figure embodied by an actor right in front of you and experience the emotions that happened 100 years ago in these dramatic moments from Hawaii history, it's just so different from reading in a book or seeing a documentary even. It gives you the feeling of who the person was and how they felt and not just what the event was.
Yeah, I think bringing these stories to light just gives us a deeper appreciation of the wonderful place where we live, right?
It is pretty wonderful, yeah.
Okay, all right. The production is The Queen's Will, and it runs through August and September, September 20th.
Right, August 20th to September 20th, and we've got three fantastic actors. It's a tour de force of acting. Hoku Gilbert portrays the princess, and we've got Reb Bo Allen portraying Lauren Andrews. Not Lauren Andrews Thurston, but Lauren Andrews. They're two different people. He's the lawyer. And Maile Kapu'ala, who's playing Mary Kay, who's a legal assistant. She also plays a lot of the witnesses in the trial in flashback sequences.
Okay.
Yeah. And Raina Faga helms it up as the director. And it's just a terrific, beautiful production.
Okay. Well, hope I can see it before it goes. But Sean, thank you so much for stopping by.
Thank you for talking with me. Appreciate it.
That was Sean T.C. O'Malley, the man behind the play, The Queen's Will. The 56th season of Kumukahua Theater kicked off last Thursday, and the play runs through September 20th. Well, that is it for us today. Up tomorrow, we'll hear about a Bay Area archive containing Pacific Island treasures, which is being shut down. We do welcome feedback. Call our talkback line 808-792-8217 or email us at talkback@hawaiipublicradio.org. Find the conversation on our website or on Spotify or Apple. I'm Catherine Cruz. Join us tomorrow for more of The Conversation.